High Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is High Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, as we do every Monday between 2 to 3, where we discuss education, chinuch, and everything around what we need to know and learn in order to improve our lives, our families, our communities, just what will help us be better people and lead us to live in the world we want to live in. And today we're going to speak about education. We're going to speak about chinuch and improving the world. However, as you know, we always have a very large diversity of topics and people and discussions here on the show. And today we are going to start, I think, a bit with the diversity and a bit of discussion about kids that are, for lack of a better word, maybe by the end of the show we'll have a better word, but kids that don't fit the mold per se. But maybe if anybody wants to come up, maybe the guests or listeners, if you have a better word of explaining what we're and who we are going to be discussing, what we are discussing today, but we will discuss the journey of finding out that your child has other qualities and potentially needs a different school system or a different schooling system or a different system that's not school or just whatever it is that they need in order to thrive in the world, because we do live in a world that everybody deserves to thrive and should be able to live in that space of reaching their potential completely. So on the show today I have three professionals, or maybe two professionals and one professional mom. I think that would be a fair statement, but we'll get there for a moment. So we'll start with introducing everybody one by one, and then we're going to go into our discussion about today's topic, which is really about going through the process of relating, understanding, connecting, and realizing that not everybody is the same mold or what we thought that is the standard or whatever that would be. So let's start with introducing our first guest today. You know what, Melanie, I'm going to start with you. You're the mom who brought this project. Tell us a bit about your journey.
Hi, I'm Melanie. I'm a very proud mom to a 10-year-old, in fact 11, today's his birthday, an 11-year-old boy who is on the spectrum.
Okay.
Yeah. Our journey with him started when he was about 5, and I knew that he just didn't fit in. He experienced the world very differently to other kids. We tried mainstream. We went to all of our Jewish day schools. We didn't survive in any of them.
All of them by the age of 5?
All of them by the age of 8.
8. It's quite...
It was good. A lot.
Quite a journey.
Quite a journey, yeah.
Okay, and then you got involved in what we're going to be discussing today, which is the Lighthouse as well. And from there, we're going to go to Dr., right? You're an OT, actually, but you are a Dr. Cole Goldberg.
That's me.
Correct. That's Tell correct. Me a bit about your work.
I am an occupational therapist and a co-founder of the Lighthouse Learning Hub, which we started in Cape Town. And I run a practice with a number of amazing therapists, and we work with all different kinds of kids and teens all over the age range and all over the kind of South African space, really.
Okay. And you've been involved in the Lighthouse as well, which we're going to learn about shortly. But let's continue. And good afternoon to Daniela Allen, who is also an occupational therapist and a deputy principal at Bella Vista. Good afternoon, Daniela.
Good afternoon, Rabbi. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, can hear you perfectly.
Rabbi, afternoon. My name, as you said, Daniela Allen. I'm actually a remedial therapist and the deputy principal at Bella Vista.
Okay, sorry about that.
No problem. I work in the remedial department and, yes, see children in small groups or one-on-one for remedial therapy, but obviously involved in the running of the school and the therapy structures and case managing children at the school. So, yes, very much involved in this domain.
Okay, amazing. So let's, kind of start the discussion and look, just to mention, I don't know if this is your department, Daniela, but I did notice that I have an invite for some kind of launching breakfast on Thursday, I think. What's happening with you guys?
At Bella Vista, we've just recently launched Timber, which is our cognitive clinic, where we are really opening up our cognitive education to externally to children and adults and teens who want to get better thinking skills and really delve deep into cognitive education through some of the works that we use, which is our Feuerstein instrumental enrichment approach. So it's just a lovely morning to just find out a little bit about what we do at Bella Vista and how we open it up externally to others.
Wow. Okay. Sounds amazing. Okay. So as we approach the discussion, let me hear from, you know what, you go for it. Melanie, tell us about the lighthouse. What is it?
The lighthouse is special.
Okay.
The lighthouse is a co-learning space where kids of all ages get to learn at their level, at their speed, motivated, self-paced. It's a place of absolute belonging.
Okay. You're saying belonging, and it's very interesting because we're starting this conversation with discussions about kids that don't necessarily feel belonging and going through that journey and process and identifying it. So we will, I think that's a great start for our discussion. We'll just have to start with our first ad break. And when we come back, we will be diving into this topic. Short break. We'll be right back.
The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
101.9 Chai FM Chai Chinuch Throw by G. We are back and here in a discussion. And as we spoke right before the break, we are starting to discuss the journey of starting to identify that your child is in their own pace or has different abilities and challenges and need a different space in order to grow and achieve. So let me start with you, Melanie, because you're an OT. Dr. Cole. As an OT, and we're going to get to the remedial therapist in a moment, because I'm guessing that an OT would start identifying at a younger age.
So there's a strange misconception that OT stops at a certain age. But what was happening is,
I'm talking about starts.
OT does start at an early age, but we go all the way up in the age range. So what happened in terms of the beginning of the Lighthouse is I was working with a number of kids who were really struggling to go back to school for a number of reasons. We had kids who just didn't feel like the school fit them. So we took, they realized they could do their work in their pajamas. They realized they could do their work in half the time. And we found that there was a cohort of kids in Cape Town who were sitting at home doing nothing. So from an OT perspective, I was thinking, this is certainly not functional. They're not going to be able to grow and be independent human beings if they're going to be sitting at home all the time. So I partnered with my mom, who's an educator, and we decided to open a space. So we opened a physical space, kind of like a Google headquarters, where kids could come and hang out. We put in a table tennis table and flexible seating. And we opened in July 2022, and by September we were full. We don't take more than 15 kids in the building.
Wow, okay. And that space to create for all the kids and everything for what they need and how they need. What if we talk about the beginning of the identification, you're talking a bit about school refusal, it almost sounds like.
Absolutely, some school refusal. But more than that, there's no question that there's a population of kids, most kids today, who are no longer fitting the old school mainstream curriculum. I think while kids are the same, the world has changed and the educational system hasn't kept up. So certainly school refusal, kids who are anxious. In Cape Town, we had kids who were transgender who didn't want to transition at their current schools. We had neurodiverse kids. But also we had kids who were just so bright that they took a step back and said, actually, if I can get my work done by half past 12, I can start pursuing my coding career in the afternoons.
Okay, amazing. So I actually want to go from what you said, about discussing that the school system has been there for years and the world is changing and kids are changing and we're identifying, other trends. And, part of the conversation, we have Daniela here, who is the vice principal at Bella Vista. And I'd love to hear from you, Daniela. How is Bella Vista specifically or generally, or how are you finding the school system keeping up with the changes and you know, being more open-minded and seeing what are the specific needs that every child has and where does the combination between the schooling and the remedial and the different challenges come into play?
Rabbi, I think it's an interesting one because I actually think our mainstream schools are actually doing quite well in terms of identifying children that need more support and might need something like remedial placement. So they are being quite proactive in that. Whereas what we're finding also is they're also opening themselves up to inclusivity. So yes, we do get some schools that are more inclusive than others, but we are looking at schools trying to educate their staff on inclusion. They're trying to upskill themselves of what they could do in their environment to be very more inclusive. So I definitely see a trend of improvement in that field, but there is that need sometimes where children need placement into more supportive environments, and that's where people like all of us come in. And I suppose it's all about early intervention, that one of the main premises of Bella Vista is to get children back to the mainstream. So we work hard in terms of remediating difficulties, equipping children with good strategies, so that they can then go back to the mainstream and be very functional.
When you speak about going back to the mainstream, is that not a bit of a message to the kids by you that you're here by default?
I think a part of their journey is understanding that they think differently and certain things are different for them, whether they come with that dyslexic profile. It's not to say they come dyslexic and they leave and they're not dyslexic anymore, but it's more about equipping them with skills so they become functional in their environment, so they got a box of strategies to pull on in difficult situations. So I do think it's about equipping them and making them much more aware of where their difficulties are, and that in itself is so empowering.
And what would be the need to mainstream them afterwards? Meaning if they can succeed and do so well within your system, let it be the system.
For us and our sort of structure that we've got currently is that we do look to get children back into the mainstream, and they come with good cognitive potential. We have, obviously, the children that join us have good cognitive potential on those standardized assessments. So they have, they've got good thinking structures, but they're falling out somewhere on the educational domain, or whether it be being on the spectrum or whatever that it might look like. But the goal is to get them back. Obviously, there's certain children, most of our children mainstream to back into their school of choice, but there are those few children that we realize where they went before might not be the best place to go back to. And what is it going to be that's going to suit their learning style and their difficulties? So it's a careful consideration, but it is about reintroducing them to life and what they would be exposed to, because they do have that potential, and we help them reach that potential.
Okay, I get it. Cool.
It's been so interesting for us because we have a number of kids who come into the learning hubs, because now we've got 6 of them, right? And we have these kids who come in and they say, can this please be a stopgap? And then we'll go back to mainstream. My child was out of school for a year because they had mental health stuff. They were admitted. Can we please just have a stopgap? And we say, sure, 100%. Because what's been so funny for us is that we find in an alternative kind of learning way, they often don't want to mainstream again. They don't want to have to wear those school shoes or, you know, go back to waiting for everybody to walk in a straight line. I just think I think there's a space for everyone. And I think there's different academic styles that suit different kids, absolutely. But I think what's been so funny for us is all of our kids who came in with the intention of mainstreaming have decided not to themselves. It's just been an interesting
thing. When you say they've decided, the parents decided, the kids decided, and where does that come into play? Because the other side of what I'm hearing from you, which is a bit potentially concerning, which I'd love to hear your thoughts about, is that they don't want to mainstream back because it, from a sensory point of view, their shoes or their clothes, and it's difficult, and they enjoy where they're at, and they don't want to maybe push themselves to the other place, or they don't want to go beyond what their comfort zone is and puts for them. That's not really life. So should we be accepting that as a choice of a child who is ready to go back to the system, but we feel that they're having a great time and fun and enjoying, so maybe we should give them the chance? Hold your thoughts, because we do need to take our next ad break. And just an important announcement, and then we will continue.
The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back in the middle of a fascinating discussion. For those of you who are just joining now and want to be part and not lose, of course, because this is, as I said, it's always a very important discussion that we need to have and should have. I'm here in studio with Dr. Cole Goldberg, who is an occupational therapist. I'm here with Melanie Gurr, who is a mother and kind of the motor behind the lighthouse in Joburg. And here with Daniela Allen, who is a remedial therapist and vice principal at Bella Vista Schools. And we're discussing, and right before the break, I asked Cole, since we are, Cole brought up that a lot of kids come to the lighthouse or different kind of schools with the intention of being it, of it being like a step until they're ready to go back into the system and then want to stay, which I was wondering if that's not a concern that they don't want to push themselves beyond the comfort zone. Your thoughts?
I think it's such a great question. And we get a lot of that from parents as well. Like, is it okay if they're in their pajamas? Is that okay? Because that's not real life, like you said earlier. But I think we are pushing the edge of innovation. We're pushing new ways of doing. So they have great daily group OT, so an hour of occupational therapy every day, to work on social skills, to work on executive function skills, to work on real life work skills and problem solving. So should they land up in a workspace where they need to wear something that's uncomfortable or show up at times that are uncomfortable, they've been equipped with skills to be able to push through. So we're working on resilience, we're working on growth, we're working on real-life modeling skills in kids today. So a typical example is I had a 17-year-old girl who asked me about some maths question, and I thought it was very flattering that she thought I could do it. And I said to her, I don't know how to help you, so what should we do? And it was all about problem-solving like you would if you were in a workplace and you weren't sure what to do. So we contacted the online platform, we typed an email together, I proofread it for her, and we worked collaboratively to problem-solve real-life stuff. So sure, maybe one day that person who really has a huge sensory sensitivity might want to work in a place where they can wear certain shoes. I don't see that as a concern. I think people go where they want to go.
But as a concept of not stepping out of your comfort zone?
We definitely don't. We definitely push people out of their comfort zone. Mel, do you want to talk to that?
I could see Mel wants to speak.
Bursting.
Go for it.
I'm okay. Bursting. So our situation has been completely different. I tried for 3 years to keep my son, Aaron, in something that didn't fit him. And at the end of the 3 years, he was absolutely traumatized. School was just, he just knew he was different. He just knew he didn't fit in. He was always lambasted for the wrong things. I remember our final...
So, Melanie, I'm going to stop you for that, because I do want to hear the journey, and let's go back to the journey and discuss what you went through with the school system. I think it's extremely important. The only thing is, the question was the opposite. I'm not talking about a child who's now not fitting the system and struggling and needs to be at a place like this, which I'm 100% with you. My question is, when all the professionals around them say, okay, you've done it, you're great, it's time to move on, and the child says, no, I don't feel like it.
But... that was going to be my next
one. Okay, go for it. You see, I need to work on my patience.
When you are being told your whole life that you are not doing things in the right way, you don't even bother trying. When you are brought into a space where you are allowed to be your true, authentic self and love the things that you do, the passion that comes out of these kids is unbelievable. I have a 10-year-old boy that after being in school systems was told, no, don't do it this way, don't do that, don't do this. If he puts his mind to something, he can do anything. And Cole will tell you that she has got like 13-year-old or an 11-year-old kid that is doing coding like a full-on adult professional. And I think the reality is that these kids are not going to end up in the so-called real world in an office job with lots of people. You know, they're not going to be my son. I foresee him being, you know, someone that sits behind a computer by himself in his room and excelling at what he does.
And I think so, we...
Cole, I want to ask you about that.
Sure.
Okay, before we go there. Melanie mentioned the 13-year-old who's unbelievable at coding like an adult. Okay.
Yeah.
Is he doing his academics in addition to that?
He is.
Why?
So, why?
Yeah.
Because I think there's some value in pushing through and doing some stuff that's hard. You've got to do English, maths, and science and those kinds of things.
Why? If he's not going to touch it, he's not going to do it. He's already set with a job.
He's already.
So what does he need it for?
So he wants to go, for example, to UCT to do, let's say, computer science. So he needs to be able to get the matric certificate. So he's doing a Cambrilearn program so he can even get one up a higher university entrance. But he's building up his digital portfolio. So he's actually, Mel was right, he's 11, and he's doing front and back end full stack web development, and he's building profiles and building up his network. And the truth of the matter is, when he goes out of school, in inverted commas, when he finishes his academic journey, he has, quite literally, he'll have years of experience working online in digital platforms. He's currently doing Morse code. He's got so many skills under his belt because he can, and he has this time and opportunity.
But he won't have experience in sitting in a class with a tag of a shirt driving him mad or wearing shoes that he hates, and then he's going into UCT.
You're absolutely right.
So how's that going to work?
Because when he goes to UCT, he can wear whatever shirt he wants, or he can work remotely and attend online lectures. Or maybe by that time, when he finishes in 10 years or 7 years' time, he'll want to go to a brand new tech school that requires them to work from home.
Okay, so basically all the possibilities are open. Daniela, when it comes to what we see by you guys, your school, you know, kids do wear uniforms, do take part in the classroom society. Are there kids that you would say to them, listen, this is not for you, go to a, I don't know, the space, a lighthouse, a homeschooling, a cottage school? Or you believe that every child could fit in within the school system?
I mean, for us, as much as we stick to, for example, the CAPS curriculum, which is the national curriculum in South Africa, we do make exceptions, and obviously the differentiation is really a part of what we do. So absolutely, that inclusivity comes in. And most importantly, in terms of our model, is we don't see the academics without seeing the cognitive side. So cognitive education is enmeshed into everything that we do. So we believe in the potential of every child, and we believe in every child reaching what are we going to do for them to reach that potential. So it would be, and it might be different for certain children. So of course, uniforms and that is very much a part of our day. But if it has to be adjusted for certain children, we're very much open to that. If that is a part of their day, that's going to make them available to learn. It's all about self-regulation and being available to learn. And if those small little adjustments need to be made, then obviously we're open to it.
When we say potential, we're referring to academic potential.
Well, we're talking about academics, we're talking about thinking, we're talking about reaching their potential in an area of their strength, because we believe that in order to work through those more difficult areas, you have to work through those strengths to get that feeling of competence. And it's through that feeling of competence that you are in certain areas of strength, probably, that's going to give you the grit and that determination to delve into areas that are a bit more difficult.
The world went from a place a few hundred years ago, I'd say 150, 200 in some countries even, that academics wasn't a factor. You could run a shop, you could run a business, you could have a family, you could have a beautiful life and not even check if your academic abilities are able to be there or not. Then we went to an era that academic is everything, and somebody who is very talented in other areas besides academic will still be called with a learning disability, and the academic potential becomes a disability if you don't have it. And now we're in an era, I think, that we are backing down a bit from there, but is there a time that you envision that we're going to be having part of society that academics is not a factor for them? And being connected and successful and families and businesses doesn't have to be based on your academics.
And I think what the research is showing is that the most successful people that are coming out of the system are good thinkers. So it's not about the academics really. curriculum and content could be accessed with a click of a button. We know that. And the children are far ahead of us in terms of AI and what's out there. But it's creating those deep thinkers. It's creating those lifelong learners. It's creating children with empathy and grit, really, and resilience. And I think those skills are far outweighing and outsmarting those academics.
These studies are done by academics. Is that correct?
Sorry, Rabbi, I missed you.
I mean, these studies are done by academic people. So it's interesting where that comes into play. But, you know, it's fascinating to me what you say, because I have a lot of chats and discussions, and I'm invited to many places to give talks and things. And I many times meet our high school kids today or young kids, students in university, and have discussions. And I think we are viewing an incredibly talented generation. I see a lot of value and a lot of strength and a lot of amazing things. Saying that, if you would ask me when I'm sitting in front of a class, you would tell me in a split second, close your eyes, tell me what is the first quality or powerful quality comes to mind about this class, many times deep thinkers is not going to be the one coming into my brain. And I'm wondering, is it that we are really producing deep thinkers, or are we in a way and looking at a world that is functioning in a high speed that is not necessarily deep thinkers? And sometimes the deep thinkers in our generation are not doing that well specifically. Is that not a bit of a challenge for us?
Yes.
Okay, Melanie, you just said yes, so go for it. Tell me.
Yes. I think that kids today face a lot of overwhelm, and that inhibits their full potential. And that's where I feel like the lighthouse and what we're doing there gives these kids, or will create a space for these kids.
When you say potential, what do you mean?
I mean that if you are functioning in fight flight your whole life, every day, if you think about how our kids live, I mean, if you compare them, I never thought I was old. Suddenly I'm old. My child lives connected 24/7. The pressure of being connected 24/7. And then still having to, you know, like while you're worrying about things that are happening online and how your thoughts and ideas and all your aspirations are also being, you know, you being given different opinions, and it's just a very overwhelming space. Put that child into a school that doesn't fit them on top of how chaotic life is, and you just can't carry on.
When you think about your child one day, he'll be an adult. What do you wish and hope? What is his potential?
His potential is whatever he wants to be. And I know, and I think that is, again, the driving force for what I'm doing, is I know that if he is supported in the right way, he can be whatever he wants to be.
Again, I'm not sure, you know, I love that. Saying that, the potential that you're talking about, you're talking about an academic potential, you're talking about work potential. Do you want to see him happy as a member of the community, as
everything.
A family person?
If you are solid in your soul, you can be solid in life.
Can I answer your potential question? I mean, OT and potential go hand in hand, right? That's like what we do as a living, is we look for potential. So if you ask me what potential I'm looking for in the kids at the Lighthouse, I'm looking for social engagement. I'm looking for capacity to exist in the world around us, to be a functioning member of society. Sure, academic potential, sure. But the ability to be able to engage, to participate, to find meaning, to engage with peers, to feel a sense of belonging, that's the potential I'm looking for. And to comment on your previous one about what word would I think about if I looked at our Lighthouse kids as a unit, or would I think of deep thinkers? I would think of critical thinkers, and I would think of kindness, and I would think of empathy. And that's what we're trying to create. I don't think it all comes down to academics, and I think all of us in the platform agree. I think it's far bigger than just that, and the potential is not just going from a C to an A, although that's a nice side effect of being in a comfortable space.
Exactly. And when we look at the school curriculum, or we look at the curriculum that the kids are doing, what are we putting in there that is for other potentials besides the traditional potentials. And again, you'll hold your thought, and we'll get to all of you because we do have an ad break. And when we come back, we'll discuss and see what are we doing. And I'll share a transition that I saw on the show through the past few years.
The Chai Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back and here discussing, the potential and what do we hope for our kids and what are we investing towards and looking at. And just on connecting to what I said before the break, something I've noticed on this show, about this show has been going on for quite some time, and about 8 years ago, I interviewed a school principal, and I trust the memory of our listeners that nobody will have a clue who I'm talking about. And we were speaking about the concept that the schools are very academic based, and if you don't manage academically, then you have a disability. But at the same time, I told her that if anybody hears me sing, you will not be impressed, but you still won't say that I have a singing disability. And for some reason, we chose academics. And that principal said, got quite upset and said, what are you talking about? In our school, we have music as extramurals and all kinds of things she brought in as extramurals that we do for that potential. And I told her exactly, because math is not an extramural, but music is an extramural. Meaning, what you're saying is that academics is the real stuff, and then the rest is extramurals, which is great. And the beauty of it is, I spoke to that principal about a year or two ago, and I saw on their curriculum that actually they had now these subjects not as extramurals, and there actually now is drama and there is music and there is these things as part of the curriculum. So we're definitely seeing a shift in that place of what's important and what we are going to. The question is, going back to that, when we look at what we hope and wish for our kids, we want them to be happy. We want them to have families. We want them to be an important part of society. We want them to be successful. Are we putting equal amount of emphasis in our systems today, in our programs, as we do for academics, knowing that our first thing in our list as our for our next generation is not necessarily academic? But today, we're putting a huge amount of emphasis on the academics. I'm actually going to go to that school to hear it. Daniela, your thoughts.
Yeah, I think we have opened up the curriculum quite a lot, as you say, with things like music and drama and things like robotics and coding that are very much enmeshed into the curriculum now. Even things like a second language or even a first additional language and a second additional language. We know the impact it has on that plasticity of the brain and that neurodevelopment. So I think we are opening our curriculum up wider in terms of sports, in terms of even project-based learning. At Bella Vista, we do a subject called Global Collaborative Design, which is looking at the UN goals and the United Nations goals of thinking and doing projects related to real-life things. So what we're trying to do is, yes, we're teaching skills, but I think the curriculum and how we do it, especially in terms of our cognitive approach, is bridging these things to real life events. It's all good and well to learn specific aspects in the maths curriculum, but how does that impact and how does that bridge to real life activities? And I think the more we bridge it, the more meaningful it is for children. And we know that children learn when they have inner meaning. The more successful we're going to be in our classrooms.
Amazing. Cole?
The way that we've done this is that we know that if a person wants to go to university, they have to have the paper, right? And that's just, unfortunately, the way the system is. There's colleges and other spaces where you don't have to have the matric certificates or the equivalent. But for us, we want to grow, as I said before, independent thinkers with huge potential. So what we've done is we, in our OT groups daily, are working on life skills, right? Much like Daniela was saying, things like our term two plan is called the nature of being human. And what does that include? How does it work with Ubuntu philosophy? How does it work with the actual body and the mind and connecting with other people? Theory of mind, understanding what other people might be asking me. And then for example, in our term three planning, we're looking around navigating the world around me. So how do I sell myself as a person? How do I introduce myself? Making a CV, practicing these kinds of real life stuff, first aid, for example. I think you're bang on. I think academics is one facet of a person, and I think the way that we've designed the Lighthouse is that the academics certainly play a role, but it's absolutely not everything. We also have an afternoon program called The Lounge, which is for what you're talking about, a vocational program, where kids come and learn what they want to learn. So we have a person who's just completed a sculpting course. We have a 13-year-old who's completed animation. We have kids who attend the Lighthouse and who are doing cricket 3 afternoons a week so that they can become quite professional cricketers. I think life is more than just school. And I think that's been a big lesson for all of us.
I'm with you on that 100%. I just have to ask you a question. How many hours a day do you have the OT groups with all the topics you brought?
So we get OT every day for 45 minutes for the littles and 45 minutes for the bigs, depending on the age range. If, for example, in one of our hubs we have mostly teens, we'll have an hour or an hour and a half. It really depends. And then the rest of the morning is the academic program, and that's the Lighthouse Learning Hub. That's the morning.
How many hours are the academics?
Let's say, for example, OT is from 9 till 10, from 10 until 12:30. So 2.5 hours.
And that's exactly my point, because we have, you brought the OTs as an example with a list of very important things. You mentioned, as you know, theory of mind, planning, organizing,
absolutely,
connecting to the world, which is huge, 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 huge. And yet it still comes down to 45 minutes a day. And the one thing, which is the academics, that would probably be almost worthless without theory of mind and without people skill and without connecting, without ability, is still taking 2/3 of the morning. Meaning we're still very far from where we need to be. I know you want to say something. Go
for
it.
Before you do, Miles, I just want to say that's why we've introduced the afternoon. So if you look at our day, the academics is 2 hours out of the day. But they're still getting through it and they're still passing their grades. Mel.
And my part was that not everyone learns the same way, and that's the beauty of the Lighthouse. It doesn't mean just because they're sitting and doing academics that a big kid is not teaching a little kid and they're not socializing over what needs to happen. It's just a different way of doing things.
Of connecting from that point, which I get that 100%, and I think that's part of the academics and the works and what we need to do. We haven't spoken a bit anything about the actual topic that we said we will, so we do need to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll go there.
The High Chinuch Show is brought to you by King David Schools, the cornerstone of our community for 75 years.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Reggie. We are back, and as we're wrapping up the show, the one thing we didn't touch on, and I think it's extremely important, although there's a lot of things we didn't touch on today, is actually the journey for a parent from, living the expectation of what they're going to meet and see with their child, and then learning from life and experience and professionals that potentially their child needs a different route and a different system and a different program in order to thrive. What is that like, and how do we guide them? And we'll just go very quickly through this. Daniela Allen.
Rabbi, I think it's really the ultimate question, really, because I think our parents feel absolutely lost and they've actually lost all hope. And I think it's about instilling that hope back into them. And I think it starts quite on a basic level in terms of understanding their child. And I think often through an assessment process, and I know that's sensitive to children that have been through so many of it, but I think a deep understanding of the child through a multidisciplinary team is first and foremost where I would look. Having that huge cognitive educational assessment, that psychoeducational assessment to understand where's the potential of this child, where's that cognitive potential, and then where on the educational side are they falling out completely. And it's often so empowering for parents and children to see that they have that huge, that their cognition is actually good, but there's much deeper reason of why they're falling out on the education front, whether it be because of things like dyscalculia or dyslexia or dysgraphia or dyspraxia or whatever it might be. But to understand who they are and how they fit in the world around them, I think is crucial. And I think an assessment is always my first port of call.
And identifying and also outside things like sensory and LT and stuff in that area.
Absolutely. That's going to form a part of that in terms of our sensory system. And I know there's our OT on the panel can speak to this much more in detail than I can, but we know in terms of our sensory system, if our sensory system is not in the just right place and not available to learn, that's first and foremost before you look at anything in terms of attention or anything, vocabulary and speech, but that sensory system has to be in the just right place. So those sort of things, and through an assessment, we do learn about all these things.
Amazing. Dr. Cole.
I think the key for us in the Lighthouse is that different does not mean less. So our kids are going to finish in the same kind of way that the other kids would. It's just a different way of thinking. So they're still going to get the academic high achievers. They're still going to be academically strong. They're going to be able to go to university. They're going to be able to study overseas and to be able to sit with a parent and say, we just need to reframe your thinking around what this looks like, but you can still have the same dream for your child.
Okay, Melanie, as a mom.
For me, I would echo what Cole's saying, but I'd also say that it's about community, not being scared of being different, being outspoken about being different, because there's power in being different.
And there's power in being outspoken. And combining those two is definitely an important concept. And you know, we tend to challenge the system many times and discuss, but at the end of the day, the fact that today, at this day and age, you are able to, as parents and professionals, think differently, and you are allowed to say, 30 years ago, if you would try say to somebody, well, I think we need to have a remedial school, I think we need to have a lighthouse, or I think we need to have the space, or whatever it is that we think we need to have, not a chance. And today, which we all see very strongly when the grandparents get involved and start commenting. And the idea is, it's very clear that we are living in that privileged space. And it's amazing. And please let it just grow. And we should be able to support the kids and the communities, many, with the unbelievable work you are doing here. So really just thank you all for what you're doing. Thank you to Daniela Allen, who is the remedial therapist and deputy principal at Bella Vista. Thank you to Melanie Gurr, who is the mom who's pushing this and brought this discussion. Actually, you emailed the radio for the discussion. And thank you to Dr. Cole Goldberg, who came all the way out from Cape Town as an OT and putting these systems together. And really looking forward to see how this great work comes together. Thank you, Sana, for putting this program together. Thank you, Craig, for managing this perfectly and dealing with all my delays and everything. And thank you more than that to the listeners for being with us, being part of the show, and keeping this discussion for our future up and running and happening. Stay safe, and we will chat again next Monday, 2 to 3, as we do every week. Please God.